my pleasure as a newcomer to the Riverdale community and a newcomer in some ways. I've been in Yeshiva University for 11 years, and in a way, I'm a newcomer to Yeshiva University as well, to welcome one of the giants who we little ones look up to, both in Riverdale. Me, I've only been here for a couple of years. I think many of you know Rabbi Sobolovsky since before I was born. But for me, who's looking up in Riverdale and in Yeshiva to one of the giants who leads modern orthodoxy in the areas of halacha, personally, I sit near Rabbi Sobolovsky in the YU based medrash, and when I get questions during the day, so you know you text me those questions during the day, I forward them to Rabbi Sobolovsky and get you back the answers. So it's really such a pleasure for us to welcome Rabbi Sobolovsky as part of the Ask a You program. I want to thank Rabbi Yosef Grossman for approaching us and suggesting the program and for organizing the program. Following Rabbi Sobolovsky's shiur, I believe there'll be question and answer. And following that, Rabbi Akiva Temler of the OU will present on what's new at the OU for 2014. Thank you so much all for coming, and I welcome Rabbi Grossman.
Thank you very much. Maybe I'll take this. I think this will be easier. Baruch Amavoy and B'Shem Hashem. Welcome to the Harry H. Baron Ask OU Outreach Program, which is a division of OU Kosher, which helps educate the public in kashrus. We have been throughout the United States with this program, in Southern California, Southern Florida. We've gone to Portland, Oregon in the Northwest, Boston, Massachusetts in the Northeast, and even into Canada with a program last year in Toronto. This is the first time that we've come to Riverdale. We've just ended a series of 10 Skype shiurim from the OU's experts to Kol Beis HaTalmud in Melbourne, Australia. And all this is under the direction of the OU CEO and rabbinic administrator, the esteemed father of your own assistant rabbi, Rabbi Yitzchak Ganach, and I speak, of course, of none other than Rabbi Menachem Ganach Shlita. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank your Rabbi Ganach for all his help in promoting this program here this evening. Just Rabbi Ganach already briefly introduced Rabbi Sobolovsky. Just want to add, in a similar vein, I was in the Beth Jacob, Beis Yaakov dinner in Baltimore, Maryland a week ago, and the Rosh Hashiva of Aaron Feldman, Shlita, revealed this was the 72nd dinner of the Beis Yaakov, and he said that his mother, Aleh HaShalom, had helped to found the Beis Yaakov, and he remembers that he was a coat check boy checking people's coats. So I was thinking to myself, Zeh HaKotan Gadol Yiyeh, the coat check boy became the Rosh Hashiva of Yeshivas Neir Yisrael in Baltimore. And then my thoughts took me, I knew in a week I'd be here, I was thinking of Rabbi Sobolovsky. When I asked him to speak here tonight, he said, where is it? I said, at the RJC. He said, oh, the RJC. I am very familiar with that. That's where I grew up. So I was thinking, Zeh HaKotan Gadol Yiyeh, this young man or young lad who was with you, has grown up, as we heard, from Rabbi Ganach to become a Rosh Shiva at YU Reitz and the Rabbi of Congregation Ora Torah in Bergenfield, New Jersey, and the Rosh Shiva, the Rav Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik Zitzal, said that the Levana, the moon, is known as the Mo'or HaKotan, the small light, whereas the Chama, the sun, is known as the Or HaGadol, the great light. And Rav Soloveitchik explained that the sun is what illuminates and is Mashpia, influences the moon. The moon is the recipient of the Or HaGadol, of the great light. So we have all come here tonight to be mushpa, to receive the light from the Or HaGadol, Rav Sobolovsky Shlita.
Usually when I walk down these steps to come down to speak in this part of the RJC, So I think what we call the gears of the Yankasa, what a person did when he was younger, tends to take over. And I kind of started to veer in that direction towards the gym. I spent more time in the gym probably than saying Shirim over the years in the RJC, but that's just, you know, for old time's sake. I have to first of all thank everybody for coming out tonight, and especially thank you to the OU, thank you to the Riverdale community for bringing me out. I'm really on a personal note. Of course, every time I have the opportunity to speak in the RJC, it definitely warms my heart, brings back very fond memories. But I have a special akaras hatov tonight, because I just left my house in total and complete chaos, and I was more than happy to walk out for a little while this afternoon, Shir. Just to give you a little bit of an idea of what's going on right now in Bergenfield. So after spending the entire day kashering our kitchen, so my 12-year-old said, Abba, you would probably be pretty upset if I started to eat chametz here, right? So I said to him, please don't try anything. I'll be back in 2 hours. And if you do, you're doing it again tomorrow. That was number one. At which point my 7-year-old responded by saying, you know, Abba, I don't understand. She was watching me do mechiras chametz last night. And she said, I don't know, what does picking up a pen have to do with mechiras chametz? And she was chepering me. What is going on? I said, it's very complicated, and it's very late, and please go to sleep. So I thank you for giving me a break from mechiras chametz and from kashering, and everything will be waiting for me when I come back. The true akaras hatov was going to my wife, who said I can even come out and speak the week before Pesach. So without further ado, I want to really address a fundamental question concerning the celebration of the Seder, the Haggadah. And it really touches on much more than just the night of Pesach itself. It really touches on our entire learning experience, and perhaps even more important, our chinuch experience. We know that fundamentally the Torah is really divided up into two different categories. There is the chelek ha-halocha, there is the part of the Torah that is the intricate, we sometimes call the nitty-gritty, what is usur and what is mutter, what is permissible, what is prohibited. Very, very detailed world of halacha that, we're all familiar with, especially around Pesach time. And then there's another dimension of Torah, the dimension of machshava, the dimension of thought, the dimension of morality and ethics, spirituality, things that speak to our heart and to our soul. And sometimes, unfortunately, we tend to view these two different parts of Torah as really very distant from one another. Sometimes we find individuals who maybe certain expertise in the area of halacha, and maybe somehow in the world of machshava, perhaps they can't speak to us. Sometimes you have others who have grown in the world of spirituality, the world of machshava, and maybe in the world of halacha, that's not necessarily their, in a sense, cup of tea. What I want to show with the night of the Seder is that Chazal tried to combine these two worlds. In perfect unison, we relate to the Leil HaSeder with the combination, the union, the coming together of both of these most critical parts of the Torah existence. And the most important part of this coming together is really the message that ultimately we're going to impart to our children and to our grandchildren. So let's take a look at the messages, the deeper messages, the spiritual messages of the Seder. What we're going to do it through the world of halacha. We're going to analyze certain halachic aspects of the Seder, with our eye to the machshava, with our eye to the message. What are we supposed to walk away with from the Seder? Not just the kazayis of matzah, and not just the four kosos, and not just the fact that we sang such and such songs, but to walk away with some very real messages, messages that will keep us going throughout the entire year, messages that we have received from generations and be able to transmit to further generations. One of the primary goals of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, of celebrating the night of the Seder, is the very famous Maimar Chazal that appears in the text of the Haggadah itself. B'chol dor v'dor chayev odom liros es atzmo ki'ilu hu yotzo b'mitzrayim. In each and every generation, a person is obligated, and we do not take that term lightly. Obligated means it's a chiyuv, it's an obligation to view oneself as if they left Mitzrayim. It is said over, some say it over in the name of the Vilna Gaon, what is the hardest mitzvah to perform at the Seder? The eating of matzah, even if you have a big kezias, it's still not so hard. Moror, also not so hard. Dalikosa, it's not so bad. No question about it. The most difficult mitzvah to perform is b'chol dor v'dor chayv adam liros asatzvu ki liyotzim Mitzrayim. And the reason why this is so difficult is because this falls into the category of halacha, what we call a mitzvah shebelev. It is a mitzvah that a person does with one's heart, with one's feelings, with one's emotions. One has to actually reach the point of feeling as if they left Mitzrayim. But even that's not enough. The Rambam has a comment upon this mitzvah of Bechol Dor V'Dor Chayv Adam Liras HaSatzmo. The Rambam says, Ki ilu yotza ato mi Mitzrayim. Ato ayin tofei. The word doesn't appear in that text of the Haggadah, but the Rambam had it in his. The Torah requires of us to feel that we are leaving now from Mitzrayim. Not that we left last year, not that we left 3,000 years ago. It's a mitzvah, it's a Torah obligation to view oneself as if they are leaving Mitzrayim this moment. How does this express itself in the world of halacha? So there is something fascinating about one of the mitzvahs that we perform at the night of the Seder. Maybe people don't find it so fascinating, a lot of people are sleeping by that point. When we get to the point of reciting Hallel, so one would have expected that we would recite a bracha. After all, it's a mitzvah, it's no different than other mitzvahs. Most of the year we recite a bracha on the recitation of Hallel. And strangely enough, perhaps the most important Hallel of the year, the Hallel of Pesach night, there is a bracha that is conspicuously missing. And the question is why? So there is a cryptic statement of one of the Gaonim who maintains, the reason why we do not recite a bracha at the Hallel of Pesach night is because the Hallel of the Seder is a Hallel of Shira, it is not a Hallel of Kriya. Shira meaning a song, Kriya meaning a reciting. And therefore we cannot recite a bracha l'kroas ha-Hallel, because Hallel and Pesach night is a song and therefore doesn't warrant a bracha. And the question is, what in the world does that mean? Practically speaking, what does that mean? What's the taich, as we say? What do the words mean that Hallel and Pesach night is a Shira? So Rabbi Soloveitchik suggested that perhaps what it means is as follows. A Shira, a song, is something which is spontaneous. An event happens, a person is saved, a tremendous Yeshua occurs, a person bursts forth in song. That's a Shira. A Kriya is a planned event. I'm going to be Koreas HaMegillah. I know what the text is. It's the same Megillah that I've read every year. I'm going to be Kore Shema. It's the same words of Shema each and every year. I know where to look it up. It's in the Siddur. It's in the Chumash. It's a planned event. That's what a Kriya is. A Shira is not a planned event. A Shira is a spontaneous outburst of emotion. The Rav explained, you can recite a bracha on a Kriya. A bracha is a preparation for a mitzvah. You cannot prepare for the Hallel of Pesach night. If you prepare for the Hallel of Pesach night, then you defeated the purpose. Because Hallel at the Seder is not supposed to be a historical event. It is supposed to be current events. It is something that is taking place as we speak. When my kids were young, we used to take them to the door, and we would open up the door for Eliyahu HaNavi. So I would always point to them and I would say, ooh, you see, on the doorpost, can't you see the blood of the Korban Pesach? Now they don't bite it. He goes, Abba, come on, who are you kidding? There's no blood in the doorpost. But I would say, where? You have to make it alive. You have to show them. Yetzias Mitzrayim is happening now. Makas Becharis is happening now. It's not something that happened 3,000 years ago. And the halacha responds in kind. The halacha mandates that no bracha is recited because the bracha would detract from the very essence of what the emotional feeling is supposed to be. So the first message that we walk away with from the Seder is a mindset. It's a mindset of now. It's the here and now. That Torah is alive now. It is not only something that has been going on for thousands of years. It's very much current events. It's interesting to note that the source that we use to recount the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim are, interestingly enough, not the psukim from Sefer Shmos, where we would have expected, but rather the psukim of the farmer who offers bikurim, comes to Yishalayim, brings his first fruit, and he recites an entire parasha thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for coming to Eretz Yisrael. A very strange phenomenon, why Chazal chose these psukim. I once heard from my Rosh Hashiva in Kerem Yavne, Rabbi Goldrich Zatzal, some of you may remember, Chaim Yachav Goldrich, we used to always say, and those who remember the way he spoke, a very, very distinct way of speaking. So he used to always ask the question, I don't understand, the farmer comes to Yerushalayim and he recites, comes to the Kohen and brings his first fruit and he says, here I am, Bosi Al Oretz, Bosi Al Oretz. I just arrived in Eretz Yisrael. So the Rashi would always mimic and he would say, Ma, Ata Batal Aretz Achshav, Ata Olech Hadash, Takvo, Sheva Dorot Yerushalmi, you've been here for 7 generations, man. Who are you kidding, Mr. Farmer? What do you mean, Ata Bosi Al Oretz? What do you mean you just came now? And Rashi quotes from Chazal, that's the point of Bikurim. The point of Bikurim is to come to the Beis HaMikdosh every year and say, what happened last year is irrelevant. What's happening now is what's important. Right now, I am coming with the freshness, with the excitement Oh, bringing Bikurim, it's as if I just got off the plane. Look at that person who comes off the plane for the very first time, when he steps foot in Yerushalayim for the first time. Imagine, go back in your minds, the first time you ever stood by the Kotel. Go back for a moment and think what images, what feelings, what emotions are conjured up in your mind. I remember when I was a little boy, maybe 5 years old, the first time when I had the privilege to come to Eretz Yisrael, and went together with the family and my grandmother, La Shalom, and I remember it still quite some time ago. I remember as a boy of five that as the plane was descending, so my grandmother was crying. And I asked, "Boy, Bubby, what are you crying about? What's going on? What's the matter?" So she said to me, I still remember over 40 years later, she said, "I never thought I would see this day. I never thought I would be able to come to Eretz Yisrael." And I have to be honest, Baruch Hashem, I've had the opportunity to fly to Eretz Yisrael several times since then. Whenever that plane starts to drop, besides the feeling in the stomach, whenever that plane starts to drop, I always remember those tears. And I always shed a little tiny tear at the Vasi Ala Aretz. It's the first time. There's something special, something magic about that first time. And that's what Pesach Night is. Pesach Night is the first time of leaving Mitzrayim. And that halacha expresses itself in the lack of recitation of the bracha. But it's not enough for a person just to be liros asatzbo ki liyotzem in Mitzrayim. The Rambam tells us there's a second half of this mitzvah. Chayiv adam laharo says atzmo ki liyotzem in Mitzrayim. One has to demonstrate as if they're leaving Mitzrayim. How do we do that? We know that the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Pesachim that we are required to drink 4 cups of wine at the Seder, and we're required to lean at the Seder. Where did these halachas come from? Who made this up? It doesn't say it in the Torah. The Torah doesn't say anything about drinking wine. It doesn't say anything about leaning. The Rambam tells us in Luchos Chametz Matzah that the Torah does tell us that we have to relive Yetzias Mitzrayim, and we have to relive it by acting it out. It is not enough just to speak. We can talk ourselves blue in the face to our children and tell them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim, that's not enough. B'chol dor v'dor chayav odom laharos es atzmo. You have to demonstrate, you have to act it out, you have to teach your children through action. And that's the mitzvah's halayla, the mitzvah of dalakosos, and the mitzvah of haseba, of leaning, a part of the Torah obligation of b'chol dor v'dor chayav odom laharos es atzmo ki'ilu hu yotzem Mitzrayim, to show and to demonstrate. This is not only true at the Leil HaSeder, but this is perhaps the most important lesson in the realm of Chinuch. Some of us are in the realm of Chinuch, spend a lot of time in the world of Chinuch. We're all in the world of Chinuch. Some of us are formally in the world of Chinuch, some of us are informally in the world of Chinuch. We influence others, whether they're our students, whether they're our children, our grandchildren, our neighbors, our friends, anyone who comes into contact with us. We are all, in a sense, mechanchim, each in their own way. One of the most basic fundamental truths of Chinuch is that if you say one thing and do something else, you can be absolutely certain that the message will not get across. The person who tells the child, it's very important, you have to come and learn tonight, and the child turns around and says, well, wait a second, what do you do? Don't ask what I'm doing, I'm telling what you have to do, it's not going to work. In all areas of education of Chinuch, a Rebbe, a teacher, a parent, a grandparent has to be a role model. And that's exactly what the halachas of the Seder tell us, that we cannot just tell our children we left Mitzrayim, we have to show our children. We have to demonstrate to our children. And we want our children not just to hear what we're saying with words, but we want them to see what we're doing with their actions as well. So within this one phrase of B'chol Dor V'dor Chayav Adam Liros Hatzatzmo L'Haras Hatzatzmo, we have perhaps the two most critical dimensions of Chinuch that take us way beyond the Leil HaSeder, way beyond the intricate details of what we do step by step at the Seder, but it's the timeless lessons of Chinuch. It's the lesson of excitement, the lesson of freshness, of newness, turning, in a sense, old lessons into new, and the notion of acting it out and dramatizing it and showing that we're doing it also, that ultimately will ensure that the message comes through loud and clear. There is another Maimah Chazal that is a significant part of the celebration of Pesach. We also refer to it in the Haggadah. Lo amarti al b'shosh yesh matzah u'moror munochim lefanecha. That one has to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim at a time when the matzah and the mor are literally on the table. We actually learn many halachos from this, that there is a connection between the sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim and the mitzvos achila, the mitzvos of eating, the mitzvos that make up the primary obligations of the Seder, to such an extent that this is actually the reason why we cannot start the Seder early. And a lot of people like that idea. Well, let's start early. There are some opinions that maintain that maybe one could, but a general practice is not to, that we do not begin the Seder until nightfall. This time of year, after daylight savings, that gets pretty, pretty late. You gotta get the kids a good nap. Some of the adults could use a good nap also, myself included. So comes the halacha and tells us you cannot start telling the story. You can't begin the Kiddush until it's time for matzah umar menachem lefanecha. And for that matter, even the end of the Seder, when the story's over, and Chagag is finished, and everyone's trying to clean up and go to bed, so we know Chazal tell us, a person should try to keep up going, keep on going, and tell more and more and more of the story. And there are some who actually have the practice that they will not remove the matzahs from the table until they actually go to sleep. We go through this every year in my house. My wife cleans off the table. I bring the matzahs back out. She takes off. Every year I remind her. Last year I told you the chumrah. A chumrah from the Frisky Rav. A chumrah. You have to leave the matzahs on the table for the entire story, even after the Seder is out. Less chagadja, if you're still telling over the story, the matzahs have to be there. There has to be a connection between the dibur, between the words, and the maisa mitzvah of the eating of the matzah. And the question is, why is this so critical? Why is, in a sense, the mitzvah of Sipat Yis Mitzrayim must take place in the context of the matzah and the maror, the Korban Pesach, and the days of old? The pasuk that describes the mitzvah of Sipat Yis Mitzrayim is a very difficult pasuk to translate. Ba'avur zeh asah Hashem li b'tzei Sibim Mitzrayim. If you translate it literally, what it sounds like the Torah is saying is that tell over the story, v'gadat olubimcha, why? Ba'avur zeh, what is the zeh referring to? Zeh is referring to the matzah maror, Pesach matzah maror. Because of the Pesach matzah maror, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim. There is a grammatical problem in that formulation. It's not true, it's the other way around. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim, and therefore we're eating the matzah. So we're backwards, but v'nafich what to say there. We say with a straight face, ba'avur zeh, because of the matzah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim. Historically, it's just Mitzrayim came first and Matzah came second. The Beis Halevi has a fascinating, Beis Halevi was Rabbi Soloveitchik's great-grandfather, he's actually named for, the original Rabbi Yosher Ber Soloveitchik. So Beis Halevi has a fascinating insight into this pasuk, which I really think speaks volumes about the relationship between Maisa Mitzvos and Sipur, not only at the Seder, but really throughout our lives. The Beis Halevi quotes the famous Maimar Chazal, where again, the particulars of this Maimon Chazal are definitely in the realm of esoteric, in the realm of mystery, in the world of Kabbalah, far beyond my comprehension. But the Sifrei Kabbalah speak about the fact that Istakol be'araiso bora alma, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu looked into the Torah, and after looking into the Torah, created the world. In effect, what Chazal are telling us that we have an ancient tradition that the Torah preceded the creation of the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu used the Torah as the blueprint. Like anyone in construction will know, you have to get the architects in first. You can't just start building a house. You have to have plans. You have to have an architect. You have to see prints. And then you can begin to build. The blueprint for this world is the Torah. What does that mean? What that means is, says the Beis Halevi, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chachmaso, in his wisdom, and again, hard for us to grasp this, but we'll try as little as we can. HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chachmaso, in his great infinite wisdom, created the entity called Torah, the concept called mitzvahs. There is a mitzvah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the 15th night of Nisan that matzah should be eaten. That existed before there was matzah in the world, before there was a power in the world, before there was emotion in the world, before there was a world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chachmasa created the entity called Torah and mitzvahs. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world and created history and worked things out in such a way that we, Klal Yisrael, were given that opportunity to eat matzah on Leil Chamish Asar B'Nisan. Now matzah means something to us. Now Korban Pesach has meaning to us. The mitzvahs existed before Klal Yisrael existed. The Torah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is eternal, goes way beyond anything of this world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in effect, created a world so that we could perform mitzvahs, not the other way around. Ba'avur zeh asah Hashem li b'tzei Sibim Mitzrayim. It's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give us his mitzvah of matzah and his mitzvah of maror and his mitzvah of Sipat Yis Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim to give us the opportunity to perform his mitzvahs. The corollary of that statement of the Beis Halevi is profound. Sometimes we approach a mitzvah And again, we're all rational thinking beings, so we sometimes approach a mitzvah, and we don't quite understand it. The mitzvah doesn't speak to me. I can't relate to it. Sounds like something somewhat archaic. And what is our approach supposed to be? So there's a pasuk that we say before we blow shofar. We say, Tuv tam v'naslam deini, kibim mitzvah secha ha'amanti. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, teach me the reasons for your mitzvahs. Why? Kibim mitzvah secha ha'amanti. Because I believe in your mitzvahs. There's an internal contradiction in that pasuk. We should stop the Baal Tokeh and say, what does that mean? Tuv tam v'das, explain to me, teach me the rationale. I want to be smart, I want to understand. Why? Because I have blind faith in your mitzvahs. Is it blind faith or is it rational? Which one is it? The Mefarshim explain, Tuv tam v'das lam deini, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I can only ask you to understand mitzvahs. I can only beg of you to give me an insight, to give me some kind of a moral, ethical, religious, spiritual uplifting for the mitzvahs, if I have one basic premise, and the premise is, ki v'mitzvah secha ha'manti. If I have amunah shleima, I will do the mitzvah whether it relates to me or not. I will do the mitzvah whether I understand it or not. I will do the mitzvah nasa v'nishma. I accept to do your mitzvahs because I ultimately have faith in you that the mitzvahs are perfect and pure and they're good. I will try my best with siyata d'shmaya to be able to relate to these mitzvahs. I want these mitzvahs to speak to me. I want to have a deeper religious experience on Shabbos. I want kashrus to speak to me. I want to be able to grow as an ethical, moral, spiritual person. I want the mitzvahs to refine me. But at the end of the day, kiva mitzvah sefer hamanti. When all ends, I do the mitzvah, kashat tziva Hashem es Moshe, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu gave it to me, and I have complete and perfect trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to me, then it by definition must be good. The mitzvahs come first. I am so happy that now I'm able to relate to matzah. Matzah speaks to me. I have a whole message to talk about matzah. I could speak about Korban Pesach. There's a Musar Haskel I can learn from Moror. There are beautiful, wonderful spiritual lessons I can get from the Lel HaSeder, and I should. And I should learn the mitzvahs, and I should understand the mitzvahs, and I should learn Tamiya mitzvahs. I should try as best as I can to get whatever messages, whatever lessons, religious teachings I can get out of the mitzvahs, I should. Kiva mitzvah secha ha'amanti. The Mefarshim even point out that the phrase that we use to describe reasons for mitzvahs are ta'amei ha'mitzvahs, the taste of mitzvahs. Most people, maybe I shouldn't say this, but most people should be eating food not for the taste. That's not the real reason why we eat food. We really eat food because it's nutritious, because it's good, it's healthy, we need it. But we all know that there's a little bit of a correlation, of a reverse correlation, between the foods that tend to be best for us and the foods that tend to taste best. But what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling us is, about mitzvahs, the taste, the reasons are tamei mitzvahs. It's secondary. The real mitzvah, the real nourishment is kivim mitzvah secha amanti. Kasha tziva Hashem es Moshe. I do it as a servant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you for the yummy taste also. The real reason why I'm eating that broccoli is because it's good for me. If I can somehow figure out a way to make it taste good, bat tova manoim, that's wonderful and great, but it's only tamei mitzvahs. And if for whatever reason I haven't yet reached the point of getting that taste, I'll get there eventually, but it's on the condition, kivim mitzvah secha ha'amanti. This approach to the Leil HaSeder, of course, sets the tone for our approach to Torah mitzvahs throughout our entire lives. We mention in this phrase, there is an emphasis on the concept of zman, on time. And the truth is that time is an integral part of the celebration of Pesach. It is hard to go anywhere on Pesach without bumping into some kind of halachic category called time. For example, even the very baking of matzahs, we all know, has to be within 18 minutes. Goes past 18 minutes, you have chometz on your hands. Everything you do on Pesach and before Pesach has to do with time. I have to make sure, is it time for bdikas chometz? Is it time to finish eating chometz? Is it time to start to burn the chometz? Is it time for bittul chometz? Everything. It's a litvak's dream world. Everything is man. Gevaldik. And then when you think you can finally get a little breather, it's after chatzos, you can relax. Not so fast. Comes a certain time in the afternoon, you can't have a meal anymore. Comes time for shkia, comes time for tzeis. And then you finally sit down by the seder and you think, well, now it's time to relax, to put our feet up, let's take all the time. Your kids for Abba, chatzos, it's a time for kaimen, it's halakha. Whatever you turn, you're mumping into chazmanim. A very strange mitzvah. It's the only yontif that we have that everything around the yontif revolves around the concept of zman. What is the message of this? What is the halachic / hashkafic message to walk away with from the significance of time? So the truth is that the significance of time begins way before we sit down to the Seder. It started already in Rosh Chodesh Nisan. HaChodesh is Elohim Rosh Chodeshim. The very first mitzvah that's given to Klal Yisrael as a nation is the mitzvah of Kiddush of Zman, of being Mekadosh, of sanctifying time. Why is that the prerequisite to Pesach? Why does that open up the Pesach season with the words of HaChodesh is Elohim Rosh Chodeshim? Once again, in the world of halacha, we can find an answer. The halacha tells us that in order for a person to be makdish something, to sanctify something, I want to give a gift to the Beis HaMikdash, there is an absolute halachic prerequisite. It has to belong to me. Eino de makdish dovash eino shelo. I cannot be makdish, I cannot sanctify something that doesn't belong to me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is about to give us the wonderful mitzvahs of Pesach, which revolve around Zman, but there's a problem. You can't give an Eved a mitzvah of Zman, because ultimately a slave doesn't own time. If you think about it, what is the demarcation between a slave and a free man? Is he in control of his or her time? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a gift on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It's called the ability to sanctify time. That ability to sanctify time is working with an assumption that you own time. You are in control of time. An Eved doesn't control time. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim, he gave us that gift of time. By giving us that gift of time, we now celebrate on Pesach, and we use time in the proper manner. We use time for Kedushas HaZman, and every moment counts, and that's part of the message of Pesach, that you can't dilly-dally, and the clock is ticking away, Chatzos is around the corner, and it's almost Shkia, and it's almost the fourth hour, and it's almost the fifth hour, and you got to make sure you do it, because that's life. Life is time. You know, they say that time is money. That's not correct. It may also be true, but that's not the real truth. Time is not money, time is life. Because ultimately, that defines our very life, our very existence. Our life ultimately depends on what we do with our time. If we make the most of our time, then we're living life. Then we have kehem chayenu v'orech yameinu. If we waste away our time, we wasted away the greatest gift that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us, and that's the gift of life itself. The message of the halachas of Pesach night, the significance of time, is not just meant for a few hours a night, once a year, but it's to put things into the proper perspective. What are we supposed to walk away with for the duration of the year and ultimately the duration of our lives? So we have some very important messages that are tucked away, hidden in between the details, the intricate details of the Seder. Between the drinking of the Dalet Kosos, we learn the lessons of Chinuch, how to serve as models for our children. Within B'shar Sheyesh Matzah Mor Menachem Lefanecha, so we learn the importance of time. We learn the significance of understanding Tamei HaMitzvos, what the relationship between performance of mitzvos and understanding mitzvos is all about. Everywhere we turn it to Seder, we walk away with another critical message which should take us not just for the night of the Seder, but really set the stage for us and our children in terms of all of Chinuch. There is one other fascinating lesson that I was able to see a couple of years ago. Sometimes you never know where you're going to get the insight of the Seder. You know, somebody came up to me a couple of weeks ago and they said, Rabbi, quickly, tell me something new this year, a new chap, a new chiddush on the Seder. I said, you know, listen, we've been doing Pesach for 3,500 years. It's not so easy on the spot just to come up with something new. We'll try. But this was really something new. This was something that hit me just a couple of years ago. And Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know, always has Hashgacha over us, watching over us, puts us in the right place at the right time, and sometimes gives us, really in a sense, a new insight, or even the insight per se is not necessarily brand new, but the application and the sensitivity to it can very much be new. We'll go back a couple of years ago. Maisa Shoyek HaChoya. We know one of the beautiful songs that we sing at the Seder, whether you sing the traditional one, whether you sing the one thing, a person has to know what they do well and what they don't do well. And one of the things I don't do well is sing, and I'm not even going to try. So it's beautiful, stirring, and you think about it, it really encapsulates our entire history. And if not when, if not now, then when, if not on Pesach night, when is there to speak about our history? When is there to make a mention of Isha Amdala Vasein of Allah Shabbachol Davidar, Kadosh Baruch Hu Matzilena Miyadam? Some of the most profound, our response to all the tragedies and the years of our suffering are encapsulated in those three, four lines of Isha Amdala. There is no tefillah more beautiful response to Jewish history than V'Isha Amdala Vasein of Allah. And I'll tell you what happened. I learned the meaning of Ihisha Amdala Vaseinu Velanu. I learned it in a strange place. It wasn't in the Beis Medrash. It wasn't at a Shabbos HaGadol's Rasha. I learned it on a Chol HaMoed trip, a Chol HaMoed Pesach trip. Several years ago, I took my kids to the Intrepid, Intrepid had been closed for quite some time, then they reopened it. So I figured, great, we'll go to the Intrepid, we'll stand in line together with the rest of Brooklyn. And we ended up on the Intrepid. And lo and behold, on the Intrepid there was a concert. It was a Frum concert, a Jewish concert, Chol HaMoed concert. I can't remember now, was it Shweki, from Willing Adam Omar? One of the guys from a couple of years ago. And he was singing on the Intrepid. Imagine, just close your eyes a little bit, imagine the scene. You're standing there, major aircraft carrier, sitting in the Hudson River, and you're watching a lot of kids, running around, everyone carrying their little bag with an egg and a piece of matzah. By the way, one of the biggest nisim, I think the biggest nisim of all of Pesach, is not the esemakvas and akvas yamsum. The pasuk says, "Vegam tzedal asulahem," that they got 600,000 people, men and then women and children, out the door with no food. Can you imagine today? If you're trying to get 600,000 people out in Pesach without an egg, without a bag, without a something, without, it's a hard pull. But they did it. So here we have a bunch of little, beautiful, wonderful Jewish children standing there at this concert. And the singer asks some of the children, kids who have good voices, come up, come and join me a little bit. We'll sing a Pesach song together. So one of my sons is bashful for sure. He's not. He's the one who's probably eating cookies in the kitchen right now as we speak. He went up to the stage. And again, at the time, he was maybe, 6, 7 years old. He gets up to the stage without any hesitation. And the singer starts to sing, Pisha Amdal Abaseinu V'Lanu. They start to sing together. So I'm watching my son and then another kid get up, singing, Pisha Amdal Abaseinu V'Lanu. And I'm looking, it's one of those, out-of-body experiences, what's, Mas Shem Osalonu, what message is the Kodesh Baruch Hu trying to send us by having my child and other children and a bunch of Jewish children singing on Chol HaMoed Pesach on top of the Intrepid, middle of nowhere, what is this all about? And all of a sudden, I guess I have a little bit of my days back in history came back to me, and I started to think to myself, Intrepid, what was this all about? What's this boat doing here? Where did this come from? And I thought, and I said this over in shul, that Shabbos Chol HaMoed, I try to say it over once a year, so this is what I'm going to be able to that minug. I started to think to myself, I started to go back. If you think about it, perhaps the darkest day in the history of Klal Yisrael, where it almost looked like it was over. If somebody would have looked at the situation, assessed the situation, may have come to the conclusion that the Jewish people, Chalila v'Chalila, will no longer exist. I would put it at the following day in history. Some of you may be surprised the day I'm going to say. I'm going to say December 6th, I know the day I'm saying, 1941. And I'll tell you why I picked that day. On December 6th, 1941, if you would have looked at the world map, you would have seen almost the absolute end of the Jewish people on all fronts. Said the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, had overtaken all of Western Europe, were well into Russia, had everything was gone. Europe was, for all practical purposes, finished. A little small holdout. England, battles of Britain, it was a bad scene. It could have fallen at any moment. The entire Russia could have fallen at any moment. England could have fallen at any moment. Even perhaps even more pachad is just anyone who looks at the map and sees how far the Nazis had advanced in North Africa. They were maybe 100 miles away from Eretz Yisrael. That was it. There was a yeshuv at the time. Half a million Jews were living in Eretz Yisrael at that time. At all fronts, there was nothing left. There was almost the end of everything. If a person would have looked at Jewish history at that point, would have said, there's no Yeshua. There's nothing. There is no future for the Jewish people. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in his wisdom, which we cannot even begin to fathom, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created and stirred events and led world events thousands and thousands and thousands of miles away in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever the cheshbonos were, and we can't even begin to be masig. A war broke out the very next day. Of course, some of you may even remember, December 7th, 1941, attack on Pearl Harbor. Japan entered into war against America. America responded. Germany, and history, in a sense, continued. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through those events that were taking place thousands and thousands and thousands of miles away, with all the tragics and carbon and whatever it was, somehow HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved Klal Yisrael. At the end of the day, Klal Yisrael survived. It's tragic and horrible and sad and mourning. But Klal Yisrael as a whole survived. Not all that different than the words that Ramban has in Sefer Bereishis when Yaakov Avinu is wrestling with the Malach, and the Malach injures Yaakov Avinu, and he's crippled, and he's falling down, and he can't walk, but he gets up, and he limps away. The Ramban says, in those words, and Sefer Chinuch points out, in those words in Sefer Bereishis, you see the truth of the eternity of Jewish history, that Klal Yisrael suffers terribly, but Klal Yisrael survives. As a whole, as a nation, there's a haftacha, there's a promise that Klal Yisrael will ultimately survive. It'll be painful, and there'll be karbonis, it'll be terrible, but Klal Yisrael will survive to the end of days. That's the haftacha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. When I was standing on that day in Chol HaMoed Pesach and listening to the words of Ish Amda, if you would have asked any human being alive on the face of this planet on December 6th, 1941, are there going to be Jewish children in 70 years from now singing the words V'hi sha'amda l'aviseinu v'lanu on the aircraft carrier that was ultimately used to bring down the Axis at the time, to bring down that part, that evil empire? Would anyone in their wildest dreams have ever known that? And the answer is no. You can't, short of being a Navi, you can never be able to predict that. And V'hi sha'amda l'aviseinu v'lanu, we sit down at the Seder and we pick up our cups of wine. We're not just singing a song. We're singing the song on behalf of generations and generations of Jews. Generations of Jews who sat down at their Sedarim under the most difficult circumstances. The Jews who sat down at a Seder in the Warsaw Ghetto, beginning of an uprising. The Jews who sat behind the Iron Curtain and observed Sedarim. The Jews, Spanish Inquisition, who were Mosa Nefesh, to remain Jews for thousands and thousands of years. Pesach speaks first and foremost of the eternity of Klal Yisrael. So the words V'hi sha'amda l'aviseinu are an integral part of the Seder experience as well. These are some of the things that we should be transmitting to our children. These are some of the messages that perhaps, if we can first internalize them ourselves and then transmit it to the next generation, to teach ourselves and teach our children what it means to say V'hi sha'amda, what it means to say B'shosh Yishmatza Mor Menachem Fanecha, what it means to say B'chol Dor V'dor Chayavadim Liros El L'Haras Atzafik L'Yotzim Mitzrayim, then our Seder will be a lot more than just a piece of matzah and a piece of maror. It will be ultimately an expression of our faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our faith in the Jewish people, events of the past, current events, with an eye to the future. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us that opportunity to once again to fulfill, in the truest sense, B'shosh Yishmatza Pesach, Matzah u'maror, u'nachum u'fanecha. We should be zocha, as the month of Nisan is the month of Geula. We should be zocha, k'shem shen nigalu b'nisan, b'nisan asif nigal. Wish everybody a wonderful, wonderful day.